Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a weekly program of conversations with regional and national writers from North State Public Radio. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
My guest today is a contest-winning storyteller and hosts storytelling events. Steve Slotowski, with a Z, has been an emergency room doctor for over 25 years and served as chair of the COVID task force at Enloe Medical Center from 2020 to 2022. Dr. Slotowski is also a National Geographic Expeditions physician. Earlier professional experiences include being a chief resident, a flight physician, and a wilderness medicine physician. Stephen Slotowski has now written a book, More Love, Reflections from an ER Doctor's COVID Journey. Now, the cover of your book is More Love, Reflections from an ER Doctor's COVID Journey, and you won me over when you wrote the title, Love More. I got the words reversed because I happen to enjoy your cover because on your cover is my favorite four-letter word and my favorite four-letter animal. So what's on your cover, Doctor?
It seems like I hit two for two for you, Nancy.
You did. And I should have put the word love first because I think that's a word we can't hear often enough. So this book is a book that we can learn a lot from, I think. And why did you want to write this book?
Well, to be honest, I didn't start off thinking I was writing a book. In February of 2020, I started keeping a journal as an emergency medicine physician. I knew that things were going to change drastically, and I really just wanted to have a reference point and touchstone to go back in time and see what I knew, when I knew it, how I was changing, how I was evolving, how it was all affecting me. And then through a series of events, I wound up posting that a couple months after I started writing. Some people started saying, this is a book, which I hadn't really thought about. One person joked it's a movie and it should star Bradley Cooper. I thought that was going a bit too overzealously far, but I appreciate the sentiment.
Well, one of your blurbs is a quote, I sincerely hope you are making a book of these incredible stories.
Yeah. You know, when you go into medicine, you have, of course, a lot of different aspects of medicine you can go into. And I would say I chose emergency medicine first and foremost because of stories. You get the opportunity to be invited into people's lives very quickly, and there are stories that make you laugh and cry and ponder this, you know, wander that we call life. And that has never left me, and I'm still treasuring it all these years later.
Well, I thought perhaps it was because of your family history that you were writing this book.
Well, yeah, that's a great observation. I think that original mission that I had, I was keeping a journal for myself, what I knew, when I knew it, how I was changing, all of a sudden took on a very different dimension as the present, which was the beginning of the COVID pandemic, and the past, my family's history, started to intertwine. I didn't really anticipate that happening, but it was an unarrestable force and obviously permeates a lot of the book and, of course, defines a lot of who I am to begin with.
Well, you mentioned that you're a first-generation American.
Yes.
So what was your family history that influenced your choice? Now, I remember that your grandmother was a nurse.
She was. I don't think she was technically formally trained, you know, as in a graduation type of way, but she was highly intelligent and just kind of knew how to read the tea leaves when other people didn't. So I think that was probably part of it. I never had the opportunity to have conversations with her. But so my family history is that both of my parents were born in Poland. They were both children in the 1930s, and on September 1st, 1939, Nazi Germany came to Poland, and being Jewish, that posed additional risks beyond just the normal hazards of warfare. So a lot of my family history is based on their survival, the loss of most of all of their families, And they're eventually coming to America, my father in 1950, my mom in 1952.
I remind listeners that my guest is Dr. Stephen Zlotowski, and he has written a book, Love More, Reflections from an ER Doctor's COVID Journey. And I was impressed by the fact that your parents come to this country and your dad gets a PhD in psychology. That was quite impressive.
Well, neither of my parents knew English when they came to this country, although they learned very quickly. My mom talks about watching soap operas. But, you know, they came from families that had been, I guess, in some way successful. They had owned factories in different industries in Europe. And so when they got here, I think that there was always that drive that you have to make something of yourself. I can tell that they wound up giving it to their kids, too, hopefully. I've honored that. And it's a story I'm proud of.
Well, he was also a professor for 30 years.
Yes.
And I can see that, too, is you're really teaching us a lot with this book. And I appreciate these lessons that you teach us through your stories.
That's kind of you.
Now, your chapter one starts foreshadowing. And I'd like for you to read, so listeners can get an opportunity to hear a sample of your writing when you tell us these two stories.
Sure. Beginning of the book. Years ago, a 101-year-old woman arrives by ambulance, shortness of breath, with an altered mental status. Clinically, she has pneumonia and bacterial sepsis. Her daughter arrives and says she wants everything done for her mother, intubation, ventilator, antibiotics, and the rest of the full court press. I talk about the option of making her mom comfortable rather than putting her through an invasive hospitalization with only a remote chance for survival. The daughter is adamant, and I abide by her wishes. 2 hours later, a 105-year-old woman arrives extremely short of breath and vomiting fecalent material. This pretty much declares a bowel obstruction, and she has undoubtedly aspirated her own feces, which is about the worst thing a person can aspirate. And surprise, it's the first patient's older sister, and the niece is her durable power of attorney. Deja vu, I'm sitting in the office having the conversation, but this time about her aunt. I am colder and more calculated as I tell her that in all my years of medicine, I have never been more certain that a patient is going to die. She still wants every measure taken. There's a thing about a physician not having to provide futile care. But in the heat of battle in an emergency department, it's problematic to implement. I practically beg, don't do this. Let me make her death comfortable and dignified. She insists, and I am forced to engage in what I consider to be a crime against humanity.
This is my guest, ER Dr. Stephen Zlotowski. And he's reading from his book, Love More, Reflections from an ER Doctor's COVID Journey. Now, this story that you were just telling also reminds me of one much later in your book. There was a young woman, and she was 29 years old. Her name was Tammy, and her mother-in-law accompanied her. Do you remember that story, don't you?
Oh, yes, I do.
Would you tell us that story? Mr. Sure. Storyteller?
Sure. I was in my residency training, and a woman came in who had a first-time seizure, and she also had a history of breast cancer. And when we saw the CT scan, which is a routine thing to get when somebody's had a seizure, the CT scan of her head, you know, I was early in my training then, but I, in all my years since, I have never seen a picture like this. It was just metastatic tumor everywhere, and I referenced it. It really looked like lily pads choking out the surface of a pond. I went back to the room, and I said that we have an explanation for the seizure. And she asked how bad it was. And I really just couldn't answer the question. I was holding her hand. I think my lips started to quiver. And I guess that conveyed the message. So I walk out of the room after a little while, and the mother-in-law, who's been there the whole time, follows me. and proceeds to dress me down in the middle of the emergency department. And the whole place, you know, people see the television shows, but the emergency department goes completely quiet, which is not happening on television. And she just lays into me about what kind of person am I, what kind of doctor am I, and I'm going to make sure you lose your license to practice medicine. Because I had told her daughter-in-law, even with just conveyance of emotion through nonverbal gestures, that things were difficult. I told her the truth because that's what we do these days. And there was a time when we didn't do that. And maybe she was referencing that time in her own mind, or maybe the news was just too difficult to process, which one can certainly understand. So I didn't defend myself. I just stood there and absorbed it and felt like my shirt collar was going to cut off the oxygen to my brain. And I ultimately somehow did not lose my license.
Well, I went for a walk with a friend this morning, and I asked her, I told her this story. I said, what would you want in that situation? She said, I would want the truth. And I recently, my sister-in-law didn't want to tell her daughter that she was going into the hospital for surgery. She didn't want to tell her. And if I were the daughter, I would want to know. So, doctor, thank you for telling the truth.
Well, thanks.
There are some of us that's what our preference would be, to hear the truth.
Yeah, and I think in days gone by, that was not the paradigm necessarily. You kind of shielded people from bad news. But that's long been gone, certainly since I was in training and have been a physician. But, you know, there's ways to tell the truth. And unfortunately, in my world, I get to tell people some bad news, and I get to be the first person, and I'm a complete stranger. So that's where establishing some rapport along the way makes a big difference.
Well, I don't have a lot of experience in the emergency room, but
may stay that way.
Well, I wasn't the patient, but the emergency room doctor came in after a while, and he was very nice. He did the stitching, but he didn't. You mentioned one place sitting down and talking to the patient, and I didn't. This was at Enloe, yeah. And like I say, the doctor was very nice, but there was not that kind of. I didn't feel the communication that you mentioned. And another thing you mentioned too, that a nurse friend of mine made me aware of. You say eye level engagement rather than lording over. And so he made sure that he got down on the person's level and didn't stand up over the patient. He was sensitive of that.
Yeah, it's, you know, we're supposed to have a stool on the right side of the bed. It's just medical convention. But it makes a big difference to sit down and be level eye to eye because by definition, the person in the bed is vulnerable. And you know, we were sharing before we chatted, you know, I walk into a room and I say, hi, my name's Steve. I'm your doctor today. I don't like to introduce a title. I'm not a person who cares too much about titles, to be honest with you. And I think that creates a hierarchy right off the bat. I appreciate the respect that sometimes people offer when they want to refer to me that way, but that's not important to me. So that sitting down, you know, there's studies that have shown that patients like it when doctors sit. It's not just something I'm making up or somebody else figured out. It's been studied, and I think anybody, if they put themselves in that position, would understand why. It shows, you know, you create this different physical connection, and, you know, with that different physical connection, there's also a different level of intimacy and trust, I think, that comes with it.
My guest is Dr. Stephen Sotowski. His book is Love More, Reflections from an ER Doctor's COVID Journey. We'll be back to continue our conversation after a short break. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. Thank you. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with my guest, Dr. Stephen Zotowski, and his book is Love More, Reflections from an ER Doctor's COVID Journey. So you say that in your book, too, something that people may not know, that in 1986, there was a law that affected emergency departments. And what was that law that affected emergency departments, doctor?
It's called EMTALA, which is the Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act. It was designed because there was a problem that about patient dumping. So people would show up at a door, and people didn't like the way they looked, or people didn't like their insurance status, and they would say, well, you can go to this hospital over there. And that law was created in large part to fix that problem.
Well, a friend of mine said that somebody she knew, all she needed was an injection. She goes to Enloe, and there was a facility fee of $500 for an injection. Do I have that right, doctor?
Well, I could believe when you hit the door and you go to triage, there's like in every facility, there's a ka-ching that happens. That's often not the real price that many people face based on insurance and other things. But I can't comment. You know, one of the beauties of what I do is I just try to take care of anybody who shows up in front of me and do my best by them. So I never, you know, one of the things is I don't know people's insurance status when I'm taking care of them. That's not my job, and I'm not supposed to. My job is supposed to be clear-eyed and just doing what I think is right by anybody, regardless of, you know, who they are and what other metrics we may apply to them. But yeah, is healthcare expensive in the United States? Yes, it is.
And I remember somebody getting a hip replacement, and he would ask some of the nurses, the staff, I guess even the doctor, he would ask, how much would this cost? And they didn't know. My guest is Dr. Stephen Zlotowski, and he is emergency room doctor at Enloe Medical Center. And he has a book, Love More, Reflections from an ER Doctor's COVID Journey. Now, I'm looking at the cover of your book, doctor, and thinking, okay, love more, but I turn page after page, and I don't see any reference to that expression, love more, or I don't see any mention of doggies and kitties, which are on your cover, a photograph. So would you...
I can answer that.
Oh, good. You anticipated my question.
Yes.
You mainly don't explain it till much, much later in the book.
But. Yeah, so The early part would be, the backstory is I wound up being encouraged to make a video to encourage people to shelter at home in March of 2020. And I did that and had quite a response, although my technologically savvy children would tell me that the definition of viral that I may apply and what he may apply are totally different. But, you know, hey, I'm older. And when I started to post parts of the journal, every... before you actually got to the text that you would read, there was always a little bit of a preamble that related to the journal post. And every single preamble always ended with love more. And that was because I was very intentional when the pandemic came that I needed to, and I don't think it's ever been a great shortcoming of me as a person, but we're all capable of more. And I said, you know, I'm going to try to love more in every direction. That's my goal personally. And that extended to the friends and family in my life, the patients that I was meeting, their families, the people I worked with, any and everybody. So that was very front and center for me. And as time went by, the book, which I had thought, again, it wasn't a book initially, but I thought I was writing about my experiences in the pandemic, the book more and more started to revolve around the fact that, hey, that preamble that I had... That was actually the essential message, not just of my writing, but where I thought when I tried to summarize everything that had happened in that first year from my personal journey, and hopefully that extends to what other people experience, that was really the message. So that became the title of the book. Interestingly, I did do focus groups about different titles and subtitles to try to see what would resonate with people. And then I also did a really crazy design project for the cover of the book. I like the picture. Sometimes people took it literally. Some people gave me feedback that, for example, they thought it might be a book about pets and COVID.
Yeah, it's not
a book about pets and COVID. But I love that picture because there's a dog and a cat. They're staring right at you. So it's very one-on-one with you, or I should say two-on-one with you. And we often have that expression, you know, like, well, when dogs and cats live together, this idea that this will be difficult. And if you look at the cat kind of furtively looking over at the dog, the eyes kind of like, I'm here, we're together, but I don't know that I really trust you. And this is our world today. We have done a pretty good job of trying to basically institutionalize and franchise hatred. That's what we're doing. And if anybody thinks we're doing something else, I'd love to talk with you about it because I beg to differ. And the antidote to that, and I desperately think we have to do it, is to love more. So I had no real understanding of what those two words would mean as I continued to write and as I tried to sit back at the end and go, hey, what is this really all about? It is about a pandemic. It is about what happens in an emergency department. It is about what happens to me as a doctor. But it's really about all of us and what we went through and hopefully what we can learn from it.
Well, here's something in your book that where you do mention loving more. You say, all I needed was a pandemic. What? Purpose, meaning, value, leadership, learning, actualizing my family legacy, self-appreciation, change of scenery, creativity, expression, reaching out, loving more in every direction. And that's what you were saying, that apparently you needed a COVID cleanse. And you said 3 years of pain and anguish on every plane of existence, 3 years of self-doubt and loathing, all I needed was a pandemic. So you saw, and you say, other people say this too, sometimes problems are a chance to grow, if I want to use that word. But you said all I needed was a pandemic, loving more in every direction.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, and I hope people wouldn't take it the wrong way, but 2020 was actually a really great year for me. And not because I would have wished for what happened to happen, but feeling like you're one of the right people in the right place at the right time, that your family's experiences. A friend actually said to me, who's knows me quite well, said, you're built for this moment. Yeah. And in some respects, my family legacy is built for this moment when, you know, the pandemic started. And I really felt as if, you know, if we're doing something that we really think has purpose, if we're doing something that we really think has value and service behind it, then that's a pretty gratifying place to be in your life. And it also kind of rejuvenated a lot of my interest in medicine when you get a little bit further on your career. And I think in any career, we wax and we wane about how we feel about our career. And this really was re-energizing at a time that I kind of needed it personally. So that was huge. And then ultimately wrestling with this question of, you know, how do we love more in a world where so many people hate so many other people, which to me is still the fundamental question of our time. I had no idea that's where this book was going to go, but it was there all along. I just needed to sit back and reflect and pull it all together in the end.
You say you don't know, you didn't know where this book was going to go, and I once in an airport in France saw a T-shirt that said, "Le vrai voyageur ne sait pas où il va." The real traveler doesn't know where he's going.
Yes.
So you didn't know where this was going to take
absolutely.
You. Now, something else that this year was, even though it was disaster and hardship, you felt good about it, if I want to put it that way, about the experience that it gave you. Yeah. But then you mentioned something else as the most fun adventure of my life. Do you remember what you were referring to when you said it was the most fun adventure of your life?
Well, that was making a film in 2016. I made a short film and this isn't a long book, so I guess I like short, and that's true. I love short stories. It's my favorite medium of expression.
So you mentioned that hate is so prevalent these days, and you mentioned also, too, that we hate uncertainty.
Yeah.
And you used, I think it's, you invented this word, me-ism.
Well, good. I finally invented a word.
Oh, that wasn't the only word I think you invented, but
I have to tell you, my youngest son is the best specialist in that, which he just loves when I tell him. I don't think that's a word, but yeah, I think that, you know, culturally, that's unfortunately, or I shouldn't say unfortunately. I should say that that's the United States of America, that we aren't as communally oriented as we are individually oriented, and people could sit down and we could have a great debate about that. But I've been in a lot of other countries in my life, and they make different
Australia
choices.
Comes to mind.
Australia comes to mind. I also have a strong connection to Denmark, and even more prominently there. But yes, I do write about that experience in Australia. And we kind of have to decide if that's what we want and make a conscious and intentional choice. But as of 2020, and I would say probably still as of now, you know, we favor me over us. And I'm not saying that's intrinsically right or wrong, but make no mistake about it, it's a choice, and you have a choice to make.
Well, you mentioned that we choose individual rights over community. And this comes up with masking. Doctor, I'm not going to wear a mask. You can't make me wear a mask. I have rights.
Yeah, masks come up a few times in my book. And to me, it was the challenge there was it was such low-hanging fruit, really. And I spent 3 years with a mask, you know, stuck to my face. And when we finally stopped having the mandate in California, the healthcare workers in my type of environment needed to wear it. I do admit that, you know, taking it off was a breath of fresh air, I suppose that's the pun intended kind of
yes.
thing. But you know, what's interesting is that now I see both patients and healthcare providers. When you walk into a room where the story is clearly one of an infectious problem, people put on a mask. And I don't put on a mask if I'm walking to somebody who's cut their hand. But if somebody's been coughing for 3 days and has a fever and congestion, I sit there and I think, all those years, we never put a mask on, and yet we knew that they had value. I don't think anybody would ever tell a surgeon in the operating room, hey, just don't put on a mask. I'm okay with that. You know, germ theory is germ theory, and we can't get away from that. So, yeah, it was an interesting time because that one, I can't say it surprised me, but of all the things that people were asked to do, to me, that one just wasn't that big an ask. Again, me versus us.
My guest is emergency room doctor at Enloe Medical Center. His name is Stephen Zlotowski with a Z. His title of his book, Love More, Reflections from an ER Doctor's COVID Journey. So I might remind people that this book, this journal you were keeping was during COVID. So this is 2020 to 2022. So some of the things you say were taking place then, but you also, they were kind of like essays, and one of your essays was about, and again, this is, I don't know how to label this, but I'm calling it anti-war paragraph that you can't, and I understand too, why do we do this to ourselves? Would you read that paragraph from your book?
Sure.
I'm calling it anti-war.
Yeah, well, the preamble on this was, this is my Memorial Day post, which is, I have to be honest, one of my favorites. And it wove in a lot of stories from veterans, and that's in large part why.
Yes.
And I spent a career collecting those and honoring them. And it was just a reference to how COVID might apply to this idea. So who can afford it? Save the rare, truly necessary conflict. We could have always spent our money better. When this COVID boil simmers down, the whole world is going to be so deep in hock, we might want to try not killing each other out of economic necessity. Even if we're enslaved by our primal urges, can we not have a post-pandemic agreement that money might be better spent on bridges and education and healthcare and collaboration and kindness and practically anything other than war?
Oh, my. I so totally agree with what you just said, Doctor. again, my guest, just reading from his book, Dr. Stephen Zlotowski, and his book is Love More, Reflections from an ER Doctor's COVID Journey. Now, you mention in your book that you're not religious, but you include something from Judaism that I think, gosh, somebody doesn't have to be religious to say, this makes so much sense. And you you refer to Judaism's greatest hits.
Yeah, right.
And I thought that was an amusing way to label that. And so would you read that paragraph from your book, Doctor?
Sure. So referencing those greatest hits, the passion for learning and knowledge, the emphasis on questioning rather than accepting dogma, the dedication to humor despite adversity, the repair of the world, tikkun olam, the rationality that deeds and actions weigh more than belief and faith, the tangibility that the reward for leading a good life is this life and not something that comes next. These were all ideas that made sense to me and that I could proudly feel I had incorporated into my journey.
This is Dr. Zlotowski, ER doctor, reading from his book, Love More. After a break, the doctor and I will be back to continue our conversation about his COVID journey at Enloe Medical Center. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with my guest, emergency room doctor Stephen Zlotowski, and his book is about reflections from his COVID journey. I had the privilege, I considered it a privilege, of attending a friend's bat mitzvah, bat Torah, as she turned 80 years old. And as I sat there listening, of course, the Hebrew I didn't understand, but I got the translations. But what impressed me was how often the word love came up. And I thought, oh, my goodness, this is wonderful. And I was just so privileged to be there and celebrate with her a celebration of love, it seemed to me. Now, you happen to have been there also. What were your impressions?
Well, that was very interesting because, you know, when we have a b'nai, which is a more general term, or bar or bat mitzvah for a man or a woman, that's usually at the age of 13. So this was somebody who was doing it at age 80.
Yes.
And of course, you bring a lot of different life experience to the table there. So, you know, I think that her work to prepare for that occasion and day, it's more than a day. It was a 2-year journey for her to do that preparation. And reflections about Jewish teachings and how that intersected with her life, and you were there because of different connections that you have with her and how that has been expressed in her life. So, yeah, I think, again, I'm not a religious person. I'd hope to think I'm a spiritual person, but that's still a work in progress. But you know, in the end of the day, it's about, you know, being kind to a stranger and loving more and taking some of the things that we know exist in lots of different religious beliefs and trying to incorporate what resonates with us, that speaks to us, and hopefully the best parts of what those different backgrounds can offer us. And put that into who we are and try to take it out into the world and do the best we can with them.
Well, I had a conversation afterwards with this person, and it seemed the basic message coming across, maybe it's what she said, was do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But also, and that added, but also walk in their moccasins, Matt. And I thought, absolutely, because just because something that I would want done to me, maybe that's not what this other person wants. So I thought, yes, that's really what it all boils down to, it seems to me.
Yeah, I think that, you know, so many of these things, again, when I kind of, it's not expressly written in my book, but it comes to me to think a couple terms, if I reflect on some of the umbrella over it, is, you know, having a true sense of dignity in how you lead your life, and then moral clarity in how you lead your life. And if you have those things, if you are truly willing to make perhaps even the ultimate sacrifice, there's a lot of Star Trek references in my book, as you know.
Yes, I did
so
notice.
The prime directive, you know, you're willing to sacrifice your life for certain things that you just say, those are lines that cannot be crossed. And I certainly learned that in Star Trek. I didn't know that I would learn it so much more deeply through my family's journey and history. And I'd like to think that I'm confident that there are lines that I'm willing to lay it all down for. And again, if we were all willing to do that, we'd have a lot of different behaviors in this country and in this world. So it's something we should all give a lot of thought to. And it's not easy to get there, but I just think expediency and I get what I want is not a way that we're going to have a functional society. And in the end, it's not going to work for anybody, potentially. Some people be hurt sooner, but everybody will be hurt at some point. So those are things that I really started to reflect on that I didn't specifically write about in the book. But when I think about what is that book about, is how do you get to love more? And I think those are some important thoughts along the way for me.
Well, I never watched Star Trek, but your book piqued my curiosity that, oh, there's more to Star Trek than I imagined.
Yes. Well, the original series really, as I wrote, was probably the most important source of information that's ever touched me because it started at a very young age. And you could ask my wife. She'll say something and go, that reminds me of a Star Trek episode.
Yeah, that did surprise me. I have to admit that that was such a favorite of yours. Now, there's so much in your book that I would like to bring to the attention of listeners, but what points would you want to get across?
Yeah, well, thank you. As I said, it was a bit of an evolution. I started writing off something very personal. Then the writing really went from March, end of February 2020 through March of 2021. And then I sat down and wrote an epilogue, which was kind of my notion. My last post was, I think, said something to the effect of, if my year of varied writings is an impressionist painting seen up close, what does it mean when you, what does it look like when you step further away? And I think that I started to reflect on a lot of things that I've been deeply involved with over time. And there were references to that throughout some of the posts that I did. And so some of that was, well, if we take this idea of love more, to me, it really became, it's the foundational ingredient. If you take a look at anything that we would look at in the world, we go, well, that's a problem, or that's not right, or we got to work on that, we got to fix that. I think it starts with love more because you're not going to be able to address healthcare issues that you had raised earlier. You're not going to be able to deal with the issues of equality and inequality. You're not going to be able to deal with issues of what's going on with our environment. Pick a subject. It's going to start with that. And I spent some time extending toward the end of the book my 45-plus year journey with environmentalism and how I think my book relates to that subject. It's really interesting.
I didn't even get to ask you about that, but you have a lot to say about that.
I do have an awful lot to say about that. And I actually think what I'm saying to be honest, has not been part of the public conversation, even from any angle of news that you want to listen to. Yeah. And it's not necessarily easy for people to hear, but I've never really been a person who believes that you just cover your ears. I've been a person who believes you deal with reality as it is, and that sometimes is difficult. But it's interesting because I did that epilogue and the extension writing in the second quarter of 2021, and you know, back then, nobody had even heard of ChatGPT. But now, when I think about it, you know, there's this, people write about AI and what the threats that poses are and the possibilities that it poses, of course. But when the people inventing the thing are telling you that, you know, there's threats, I think we ought to take that seriously. That might potentially be a more imminent threat to us than environmental issues. But yet, I would say the exact same things apply that I've been talking about, loving more. Dignity in how you live, dignity in how you think you might die, moral clarity, standing for what's right, for what's wrong versus what's wrong, standing for not personal expediency, but community welfare. I think all that's in there. So, yeah, it turned out to be much more complicated of a book than I thought it would be. I have to say I'm pleased with it.
Well, I think it also will spark reflection, and that's the word in your title, reflections. Yeah. When somebody reads this, and they will think, oh, COVID was terrible, but then they might begin to see there were gifts. You even used this word, COVID gifts.
Very much so.
And I can see that, that you even, that was, you say, you called it your COVID mantra, love more. I think that's a great mantra for not just COVID. I think daily, love more. And in spite of the trauma and the problems, they became opportunities. And I think if people have a chance to reflect, as you were doing, they might say, oh gosh, yeah, there were, COVID could be viewed as a gift in a way.
Yeah, I don't think we started off thinking that
was
the case.
No, no.
But you know, it upended the world. And when that happens, you have a tremendous opportunity to reflect on, well, what wasn't so great about our world before this started? And this gives you the opportunity to put that a bit sometimes under a magnifying glass, and I think we all saw that. And, you know, there's that cliche of, you know, change is opportunity. And yeah. I've always kind of went, oh, I'm rolling my eyes a little bit. That was some at times. But I think that's really very true. And there were a lot of gifts. I think for me personally, there are a lot of gifts that we could have collectively garnered from the experience. I'm not so sure we've tried too hard on that. And, you know, one of the things that I reference in the book is a story from the Winnemem Wintu. And this is about the run for salmon, for salmon going back from the San Francisco Bay up the Sacramento River and ultimately into the lower McLeod River. And when one of the tribal members said that the answer for the problems hindering the successful journey are the successful journey itself. And I've really sat with that sentence now for a good number of years. I'll try to say it without slurring. The answers for the problems hindering the successful journey is the successful journey itself. You know, I think we've all experienced that in our life. We've had things that we went, I just don't know if I can do that, or boy, that's going to be hard. And, you know, it turns out that the way to fix that is not to try to sort out all those things ahead of time. It's just to do it. And then in the process of the doing, everything that you were worried about, guess what? It just stays quiet and still. And that personal transformation that you get, I think there's an opportunity for us as a country, as a society, hopefully as a global community at some point, to get there. And that's been another deeper reflection that I certainly didn't start off with when I was writing.
I can certainly understand that in my own experience, Doctor.
Yeah.
It's been such a pleasure talking to you about your book, and I think people will really learn from it, besides be entertained by it, because some of your metaphors are, oh my goodness, Doctor, another metaphor.
Well, as I said, stories, metaphor, I really enjoyed them. And one of the things about my workplace is it's a great forum for my stand-up comedy. So, and sometimes humor is really good medicine.
Oh, I certainly agree with that.
So, you know, I've certainly incorporated that to make the book both serious and thought-provoking, at times challenging, but also just fun to read. And I hope all of that will be people's experience with it.
Well, thank you for talking to us about this book. They remind listeners, my guest has been Dr. Stephen Zlotowski, and the title of his book, Love More, Reflections from an ER Doctor's COVID Journey. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you so much for having me, Nancy. It's been an extraordinary pleasure to be with you.
Chico State professor Sarah Pape teaches creative writing and also is an award-winning poet. She's here today to tell us about a summer camp for young writers.
Yes, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to tell you about the Young Writers Camp 2025 that the Northern California Writing Project is hosting. It'll be June 23rd through the 26th, and this year we've extended the program, so it's a longer day. It'll be from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Chico State's campus. It'll be all sorts of genres, poetry, fiction, nonfiction, responses to art, doing some crafts, and generally just having a bunch of fun. Our two facilitators this year are Marta Schaefer, who teaches at Oroville High School. She was a facilitator last year and was wonderful. And Alex Rainey, who is a 16-year elementary school veteran and teaches at Chico Country Day School. So she's currently a second grade teacher. So we have both ends of the spectrum. We are inviting students who are rising fourth graders to seventh graders, though we could bend that a little bit if you feel like there's a writer out there who might be a little more mature for their age or really, really wants to come. And it's $350 per writer, but we can extend our early bird fee if people need help with that, and $300 if there's a sibling who comes. So there's a discount for that as well. And we're inviting people to let us know if they need some financial help. We'd be happy to offer a scholarship. We just really want writers to be there, and the kids who want to spend their time writing poems and working on character development and thinking their thoughts on paper, we just really want to encourage that. So anybody who feels like they know a young writer or have a young writer in their family, please send them our way. They can find us on Instagram at NorCal Writing Project. And our website is ncwp.sites.csuchico.edu. And my personal email is spape@csuchico.edu if you have any questions about the camp.
Okay, so that email again is spape, P-A-P-E,
yep,
at csuchico.edu.
Yes, and there's lots of information on our website and our Instagram as well.
Now, you also, you want to give the deadline again?
Well, we're extending it, so we'd love to have people registered by May 30th, but we'll keep rolling them until the second week of June.
So you also say that if you have questions, you can call or email Sharon DeMeyer, and you give her email address, but you say that they can contact you.
Well, either of us, but Sharon luckily is headed to Brazil for the month of June. So I just want to make sure you catch somebody.
So in a sense, you are facilitating this project, but you're not one of the facilitators.
I will be there every day. I might help with some of the work. We're going to be workshopping this year. That's a new addition, is we're going to be leading young writers workshops. So in addition to generating lots of new work, we're going to be holding workshops every afternoon where the students will have a chance to look over their work and give each other suggestions and get suggestions from the teachers. A very cool thing about this program is that every kid will leave with a publication of their own work. We create an anthology of a sample from everybody's writing that they've done, and we have a reading that the parents and different people are invited to come to at the very end. So very joyous, and it's a wonderful addition. And, you know, on the front end of that, students get a tote bag, they get a notebook, they get some pens, and we provide them with all sorts of things to inspire their writing process.
Well, I'm sure you wish that such a thing existed when you were a kid.
Oh, absolutely. I would have been there every time.
As a fourth grader, I think I would want to sign up when I was just in the fourth grade.
Well, we had a wonderful year last year, and I just want to make sure we catch all the kids who want to write. You know, I think not every kid is the kind of English reader, writer kid, but we want to find the ones who are and really, like, appreciate and encourage that kind of thinking and play and experimentation.
Because writing, if these kids are planning to go to college or whatever they plan to do, writing is such a wonderful skill to develop at a young age,
absolutely.
I think.
Yeah, I mean, it sets them up for a lifelong appreciation and access to a creative form that can be for all sorts of purposes, academic to creative to self-expression, and I think that's very much needed today.
Thank you for coming in and
Absolutely.
Telling us about this.
Thank you for having me.
I would also like to thank my first guest, ER Dr. Steve Zlotowski, author of Love More. And next we have a segment we call The Writer's Room, and it features writers from around the North State.
The Echo of Love. They send me to the hospital for an echocardiogram so they can see inside my heart. Lou, the technician, tells me the heart is like a house with many rooms, and this will show them the size of the rooms, if they have cracks in the ceiling, leaks in the pipes, a damaged sun porch. I can hear whooshing, see my blood flow, see it drop, the colors on the screen, red, blue, green, like a geyser exploding, like the colors of falling in love, blasting through my body, flutter through the day, same pounding, racing away, my heart screaming, let me out of here. I say, Lou, how are things looking? Pretty good, huh? Big flow, all those colors. And he says, we need to take a deeper look before we know if there's a problem. I understand. Look as deep as you need, Lou. You will be the only one who'll ever know what goes on inside those chambers. Kim Dower.
For more information on the writers you've just heard, go to mynspr.org and click on the poetry link.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf, a production of North State Public Radio. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org.